Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, September the 19th, 2014. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by my co-host, Jackie McIntosh.
Hello.
What mic are you on, Jackie?
Two.
Okay, so we need to put you up a bit more here. Jackie McIntosh and our guest host, our guest co-host Amir Ali. Welcome, Amir.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, Alyssa, Jenny, and Carissa are away today. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at cooperadio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. We have an excellent program for you today. For our first interview, we will have David Lee on the show, who is the founder and owner of the Field Roast Grain Meat Company, which produces some of the most delectable cruelty-free sausages, meatloaves, roasts, and deli slices that vegans and vegetarians have come to love since 1997, especially us here in Canada. So it came as a shock to both David and Canadians when the Canadian government announced a few weeks ago that Field Roast is no longer allowed to be distributed in our country until it complies with labeling laws that pronounce field roast products as being simulated meat products that adhere to the standard of nutrition as set by the nutritional profile of dead animal flesh. David will be here today to tell us about his experience in this state of affairs and what he intends to do to fight back. And for our feature interview, we have an activist profile with animal and social activist Alexandra Paul. You might best know Alexandra from her various roles as an actress in over 75 films and television shows, but we know her here as a dedicated and outspoken activist for the animals. She is being presented with the Vegan of the Year Award at next month's Last Chance for Animals Gala, and I'm excited to have her on the show today to share with us her story about being a lifelong animal activist. That interview is coming up in about 27 minutes, so please do stay tuned. So we had local activist Elmira Tanner on the show a few weeks ago to tell us about the Disrupt Speciesism Challenge that has been spreading throughout the community as a way to publicly speak out for the animals. And Jackie, you rose to the challenge recently. Tell us about that, please.
Yeah, so there was a few activists that have been taking the challenge locally, and I was actually nominated by a fellow activist, Paula, to do the challenge. And I thought that because...
Jackie, just one sec. I'm going to ask you to switch mics. That one's not good quality. Just swing that other one around. Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Much, much better. Go for it.
Should I start from the top again?
For sure.
Okay. So I was... a few activists in Vancouver had been taking the challenge to disrupt speciesism. And I was recently nominated by local activist Paula to take the challenge. And I did. I thought it was kind of... because at our last demonstration, which we did against a humane washing butcher shop called Pasture to Plate, we were recommended by one of the passerbys, why don't you go protest at Safeway? So I thought, ironically, I would actually do this disruption at Safeway. So I went into the Safeway space, and actually the reaction, of course I was really nervous because I've done tons of demonstrations, but going in on your own, although I did have... two other people helping out.
Videographer.
Yeah, videographer and, you know, a moral support person there.
You had people.
I had two people, but it's still like all the attention is directly on you. So I had kind of planned out a speech in advance and then entered the space, and I was just shocked at the reaction from the people there, because usually when you enter a space like a restaurant or a grocery store, any kind of space where the violence against animals is so normalized, people get really defensive, and usually there's a lot of heckling in this.
You definitely have experience with that.
Oh yeah, and actually
yeah,
that kind of
talking about.
Yeah, it kind of usually fires me up and makes me more, I don't know, not comfortable, but makes me more passionate. So when I didn't get that kind of response and people were actually just standing around staring at me, I was like, I
was listening.
They were listening. It was good. I was just not sure how to react because it's such a polar opposite of what I'm used to. So it actually made me more nervous in a way.
Well, I have to tell you that those all those videos that are popping up on Facebook, they make me nervous. So I don't even watch them because I know what's involved. But I did watch your video, Jackie, because I had you for research for the show. And it's posted on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, if people want to watch it. And I have to say, there was that one man who was standing about 2 feet away from you, just staring at you. And just I was ready for him to say something, but he just seemed to be intently listening. What did he say to you after?
At the end, he's like, oh, does that mean we shouldn't eat meat? I'm like, and you obviously didn't get the point.
Well. But you said, of course, yes, that's what it means, right?
Well, I didn't respond to it, but the filmographer basically said, you know, it's not, of course, we shouldn't hurt anyone if we don't need to, or something along those lines, just to make it very clear that these animals are not meat, that is their dismembered body. It is not food, it's violence. Mm-hmm. And just making that message very clear. I was actually really surprised, and I was shocked at, like, the amount of shares the video got. I was trying to kind of post it somewhere where I thought maybe like people I knew would only see it, and then no, it got shared by like everyone internationally, basically.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then I got lots of friend requests, which is great. I was just surprised at the amount of support. So it was pretty amazing.
Can you give us just a little bit of maybe just a bit of the wording, because you probably still haven't memorized of some of the things that you said?
I don't remember the exact speech anymore, but and it's kind of long, but it was basically talking about the connections between oppression of non-humans and oppression of humans, and how most of us, at least, or a lot of us, see that the oppression of humans is morally wrong, and just trying to make the connection with people there. So that was the basis of my speech, and I was also asking people to join in the fight for liberation.
And you were standing right there in front of the dead bodies, which is who you're representing. And I have to say, like, I always try to avoid that part of any supermarket, as you two probably do as well, right?
Yeah,
it's
definitely pretty
off-putting. So I feel it's very off-putting as well, that people just... as you said, it's normalized, especially Safeway. Mm-hmm. What a mainstream. I mean, there's been demos done at Whole Foods where they actually more celebrate the fact that they're killing animals. But in Safeway, it's just part of the normal background. And it's just there all the time.
And that's what it's about, is just bringing the animals' voices into that space and making them present.
Okay. Well, thank you for that, Jackie.
Hey there, Co-op Radio listeners. Do you like food? Of course you do. Do you want to know more about food? Who doesn't? Well, to learn about cooking, food sourcing, buying, selling, the politics of food, to know all these answers and other food-related questions, tune in every Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m. for Food Line Radio, where we and our guests talk and talk about food. In fact, we're so busy talking about food, we don't even have time to eat it. Work up your appetite with Food Line Radio, 5 to 6 p.m. Tuesdays on Co-op Radio 100.5 FM.
You are listening to Animal Voices Radio here on 100.5 CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and these are your upcoming events. Join the local animal rights group Liberation BC as they'll be handing out their humane, organic, sustainable leaflets and letting people know that these terms mean very little to all the animals that are used for food. They will meet at the park and then spread out along Commercial Drive. And if you want to learn more about the humane meat myth, we'll be doing an interview on this subject in the future with Hope Bohannock, who has written a book on this subject called The Ultimate Betrayal. So please look out for that. And this is happening on Saturday, September the 20th from 2:30 to 4:30, which is tomorrow. It's at Grandview Park, located at Commercial Drive and Charles Street. Who wants to go to Portland?
I do, but I'm not.
You can actually get to Portland pretty cheap on the Bolt Bus. We did that a little while ago, but this is a great reason to do that. It's the annual Portland Veg Fest, and it's happening at the end of this month, and it's certainly worth the drive or train ride or bus ride if you're coming from the north of the border. This is a place to try hundreds of free food samples, check out the mini farmers market, fashion and beauty areas, and film screening room, and to hear many significant speakers in the vegan movement at Oregon's largest plant-based food event. Some of the notable presenters will include Dr. Joel Furman, Ellen Jaff Jones, who we've had on the show before, vegan pastry chef Queen Fran Costigan, Admission is $8, but you can download a $1 off coupon from their website, portlandvegfest.org. And again, this is Saturday, September the 27th and the 28th from 10 to 6. And it's happening at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland, Oregon.
And I have been to that event a couple times before. It's really worth it, which is why I was trying to get out to there next week. But it's not
going
to happen.
Yeah, I've always wanted to go.
Yeah, I went last year. It was a lot of free food, which was great.
It's huge. And they say it's going to be twice as big as usual.
Wow.
And usually it's a huge event. Mm-hmm. Definitely worth going to.
That's the Veg Fest everyone I know talks about. Also coming up, this is Saturday, October the 4th. It's the Walk for Farm Animals. This is an annual event not to be missed. The annual Walk for Farm Animals to Benefit Farm Sanctuary is happening on October the 4th, where about 100 of us animal advocates will proudly claim the streets of downtown Vancouver as we march for the farmed animals. Check-in is at 10 a.m. and the walk takes place from 11 to 12 and will follow a 2.3-mile route through downtown, followed by a one-hour celebration. You can register at walkforfarmanimals.org/event/Vancouver, where you can join a team or fundraise on your own. And again, that's Saturday, October the 4th from 10 to 12 in front of the Vancouver Art Gallery on the Georgia Street side. Also on October the 4th, following the Walk for Farm Animals, is the Global March for Elephants and Rhinos, which also departs from the Vancouver Art Gallery at 1 p.m. An elephant is killed every hour, and a rhino is killed every 10 hours. And the march seeks to bring attention to the crisis these non-human animals are facing and put a stop to poaching. You can find more info at marchforelephantsandrhinos.org.
And our last event.
Yeah, finally. Thanks
for
Living, Monday, October the 13th at 5:30 at Oak Ridge SDA Church, and it's co-sponsored by Animal Voices.
Yeah, so it's our fourth annual Compassionate Thanks Living. We're starting to build up hype now. There's a Facebook event for it now if you wanted to search for that on Facebook. And we'll have it up on our website tonight, animalvoices.org, if you want to find out all the info. So, Jackie, you have been to a Compassionate Thanks Living a few years ago.
Yeah.
And Amir, have you ever been to a Compassionate Thanks?
I have not.
Okay,
yeah,
so
but
you've got to come this year. Last year we had 210 people come out to celebrate all vegan food. It's a potluck. So if you can imagine, that was over 200 dishes that we had to share. And there's going to be live musical entertainment and our wonderful raffle. And it's just really a wonderful way to get the whole community together who don't want to sit with their, you know, their family over a dead animal and celebrate that, when we really want to celebrate life and not death. So it's a wonderful event. And I just feel that it's really needed in our community, which is why I've been working on this for, this is my fourth year. So please come out to that. That's Monday, October the 13th, starting at 5:30 p.m. at the Oak Ridge SDA Hall. So yeah, if you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have advertised on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page at Animal Voices YVR. So, today's first interview is with David Lee. He is the founder and owner of the Field Roast Grain Meat Company, a business that he started in Seattle, Washington in 1997, where it is based out of today. His company produces a variety of traditional meat products that are made of a special grain meat recipe, and these completely plant-based foods have garnered the following and praise of many vegans and vegetarians and omnivores in the United States and Canada alike, who love the taste and texture of his apple sage sausages or celebration roast, to name just a few favorites. However, as of just a few weeks ago here in Canada, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, or CFIA, has declared that Field Roast will no longer be able to distribute in Canada unless its specific food labeling laws for what they call simulated meat products are adhered to. David is here today to tell us his story in this whole turn of events. Hello, David, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm great, thank you. So thank you for coming on the show today to speak with us about this situation. You're here today to share your story, but could you first give some background to our listeners about what you're all about? Please tell us about the Field Roast Grain Meat Company, what kinds of products you sell, and the whole philosophy behind your grain meat products.
Yeah, sure. The Field Roast Grain Meat Company is located in Seattle, Washington, just over the border from Vancouver, and we have been in business for about 18 years. And I got the idea for the product because I was working with an artisan bakery, and in the 90s. And, you know, I was seeing all this really, you know, beautiful hand-formed bread and all this care that was being put into the product. And meanwhile, I was doing some product development, and I was developing a kind of a teriyaki wrap, and I was looking for a protein food to put into the wrap. And I saw all these, like, fake meats and, you know, these products that, you know, were trying to be something that they weren't. You know, they're trying to be like a fake ham or a fake chicken or something like that. And I just kind of put two and two together, and I thought, you know, why not make a real vegetarian or vegan grain meat product that was not trying to imitate the sinew and flavor, I mean, of animals, but was all, you know, plant-based. So, you know, plant-based seasoning. So, for example, for our original product line, we make smoked tomato, wild mushroom and lentil sage, loaves and deli slices, and, you know, those flavors are not trying to imitate animals. They don't emulate animals, but, you know, smoked tomato is red and smoky, wild mushroom is dark and earthy, and then lentil sage is very herbaceous. And so that's how the company started, and, you know, we've grown nice and steadily over the years. We just moved into our new plant here in Seattle, which we're really pleased to be in, and it's our third building. And we sell our products all over the U.S., all over Canada, or at least we did until a week ago. We sell in Europe, we sell some in Australia, and some throughout Asia. I think people really resonate with the fact that, you know, we're not trying to be something that we're not, you know, and you know, people like the quality of what we do, and the reason why it's easy to make a really good tasty product is because we aren't trying to imitate, you know, those flavors, which are kind of hard to do, I think. It's kind of scientific.
So tell us what happened earlier this month when the Canadian Food Inspection Agency contacted you about issues with the labeling on your products in Canada.
Yeah, well, you know, unbeknownst to us, you know, there's this rule that exists that if you make a sausage or any product that looks like in the same form that an animal meat product is made, then you are supposed to emulate the nutritional profile of that product so it matches an animal product. So that's why if you notice, if you look at some of our competitors, they fortify their products with chemical supplements and vitamins, and then on the front of the package they'll put simulated meat, and also there's something called the protein efficiency ratio, which is kind of an arcane study. It was developed in around 1916, but then became into law in Canada in 1981, and essentially what it is it's a rating of the efficiency of the protein as compared to an animal protein. So, you know, with the implication being that vegetarian proteins are insufficient or are incomplete. They're an incomplete protein. So, you know, this is what they ruled for us, and you know, we understand that those were the regulations, and I guess bad on us for not knowing that. We, you know, when we came into the Canadian market, we've been selling in the Canadian market for 5 years, and I know that before then, a lot of people would come across the border and get our products, and they come to visit us in Seattle. So we were just kind of shocked that to learn this. But as I said before, we went into the Canadian market. We did work with a consultant, and we thought our labels were all, you know, in compliance, but obviously they aren't, according to the regulations.
So I'm curious to know, you said your product's been in Canada for 5 years. Why is this all suddenly happening now as of a few weeks ago?
Well, I think these laws are enforced randomly. I mean, the people, you know, that I met with, you know, they're all very busy people. And, you know, somehow they just kind of get around to it. This is very common in the industry. I think it's common in the United States as well. And this is kind of what happens. It was just kind of our good luck, I guess.
So you told me a few weeks ago that you're not going to stand for this ruling and that you're going to do what you can to keep Field Roast in Canada. Can you first explain why it is you take issue with these food regulations of the Canadian government?
Yeah, well, I just think that it's archaic to use animal protein as a standard. And, you know, there is actually a new Food Modernization Act that's coming into consideration here in the next year in Canada. So, you know, this last week I was in Toronto and attended a regulatory session with the Canadian Health Food Association, and there's a lot of excitement about what that might bring. I think that this law here is a throwback from a time when it was certainly an animal protein paradigm, where animal protein was really kind of the base, and that was what was used as a kind of gold standard. And I think since then, there's just been a whole flowering of vegan consciousness and awareness, and people learning to eat differently and learning to, you know, and so I think that the people that eat our products, you know, many of them eat meat, actually. A lot of our customers are flexitarians. A lot of our customers are vegans who are eating our field roast products, and also eating tofu, and they're eating the butternut squash and kale and quinoa and all kinds of good food. And I think there's a misunderstanding that people are eating these kinds of products like field roast in the same way that people ate meat like in the 60s. Or maybe still eat, actually, probably today, you know, in terms of just, you know, you always need to have, you know, something like that on your plate, and a protein food like that on your plate. And I think that's just not the case now. So, you know, we've had just a great outpouring of support. My wife and I went to the Toronto Veg Fest and met with a lot of our customers there, and people were just really, you know, disappointed to hear about this and just love our products, and we're quite happy eating them. So I think that, you know, the issue about safety and I think there's a confusion also with the word vegan, and I don't think that the Canadian government and the Canadian Food Inspection Agency and their regulations actually recognize the word vegan as a standard. And so instead they want us to put simulated meat on our product, which of course we find abhorrent and kind of against what we're about, because some people may not believe us, but we're not trying to imitate animal meat. This is a, you know, we use the word meat, which actually they did not find fault with, because it's part of our name, the Field Roast Grain Meat Company. And if you look up the word meat in the dictionary, often the first definition will be, you know, towards animals, but the second definition, and in some dictionaries, the first definition is solid food. So you might have heard the word meat to describe the edible portion of a nut, so nut meats, for example, or coconut meat. And so we have coconut meat, nut meats, animal meat, vegetarian meat, wheat meat, soy meat, and so forth. It's kind of like how, you know, if you look at the milk category, it's actually very similar to what's happening in Canada with the milk category, because in Canada, as in the U.S., the vernacular or regular everyday usage, everyone calls those milks milk. So when I'm at your house and we're having a cup of tea, you know, you're going to ask me, David, would you like to have some almond milk with your tea or soy milk or whatever? But yet on the shelf, on the label in retail stores, it is illegal or non-compliant for those beverage makers to use the word milk to describe their plant-based milks. They have to say beverage, and they also have to fortify it too. So it's the same kind of thing. So I think, you know, actually the milk category is the same situation in the veggie meat category too in Canada.
So can you tell us what course of action that you are planning to take to try to get these laws reworked in Canada?
Yeah, so, you know, there's been a lot, you know, there's a huge outpouring of support. You know, we've got a lot of friends and really great people that have been super supportive, and, you know, are kind of, you know, want to mobilize. And of course, you know, I'm a vegan myself, and people feel very strongly about this. But we are taking right now a more considered approach, working through the corridors of power, and we're going to apply for what's called a temporary market authorization letter, which will enable us to get permission to continue to sell our products in Canada while we build the case through science, through a study that we will put together that will show kind of what I just described. It will show that people are not confused about our products, that they know that they're vegan, they know they don't contain animal products, and to show that people who eat our products are eating lots of other food and also are quite healthy eating them as well. And so there's no lack of nutrition. And so I think, you know, I think I'm fairly confident that if we're able to show that, that we will be successful in doing that. So right now, I know there's a lot of people that are really, you know, kind of chomping at the bit to, and really, you know, are upset, you know, even angry about this, and as I am upset about it. But we're asking those people just to chill a little bit while we are pursuing this course with the Canadian government. And then, you know, pending that decision, we'll take our next steps.
Well, that's what I was going to ask about next is what can we do as consumers? I can say that since this news first came out in Canada a few weeks ago, that here in Vancouver, your large base of Vancouver supporters who just love Field Roast have been wanting to know what we can do as citizens and consumers to get Field Roast back in Canada. Is there anything that we can do, or should we just chill out, as you were saying?
Well, yeah, I think right now, if people be, you know, so I've been advised that it's best that just, you know, we don't want to create a firestorm and create like a partisan, fireball, you know, about this. We want to just, you know, allow us to kind of work through this group of people in Ottawa and, you know, these regulators and see if we can speak some sense to them and get their permission to get this authorization to sell our products in the Canadian market, with the idea that we will put together a study that will show that our products are not confusing and are healthy for Canadians.
Well, thank you for coming on the show with us today, David, to speak about labeling issues with vegetarian meats in Canada and how it's affecting your business. And I just have to say, I'm supposed to be on a raw food diet now. And yesterday when I was making these questions and today before interview, just something made me have to go to my fridge and get an apple sage sausage to eat.
That's great.
favorite. So to find out more about the Field Roast Grain Meat Company, you can go to fieldroast.com and to see the exact wording of the nutritional requirements for simulated meat products on the Government of Canada Justice Law's website, please visit our website, animalvoices.org, for the direct link. Thank you, David, and I wish you luck.
Thank you very much, Allison. We'll keep you guys updated as we go along, too, so you'll hear from me again, I'm sure.
You are listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio in unceded Coast Salish territories, British Columbia, Canada. So I have some news stories for you. A couple stories from Sea Shepherd. Sea Shepherd recently launched an Operation Pacuari sea turtle anti-poaching campaign in Costa Rica. So the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society Costa Rica and Latin American Sea Turtles, otherwise known as LAST Association, have launched Operation Pacuari, an anti-poaching campaign to protect sea turtles on Pacuari Beach in Costa Rica's Limon province. Marine biologists predict that September is likely to be the peak nesting month for green sea turtles, thus they suspect an increase in poaching activity to occur during this time. LAST, a member of WIDECAST, an international scientific organization network, has been spearheading the Sea Turtle Protection Project, and with volunteers' numbers steadily declining, LAST called upon Sea Shepherd to become an international partner to increase awareness on the local crises and recruit volunteers from its vast network of dedicated activists to protect green hawksbill and leatherback sea turtles, which all frequent the small island to nest on a yearly basis and are all fairly critically endangered. And despite the fact that activist Jero Mora Sandoval was killed by poachers on nearby Moon Beach in 2013, for those of you that have heard of this, turtle slaughter and egg poaching remain relatively unexposed by the media, as Costa Rica is often portrayed as an ecotouristic safe haven for animal species. So Sea Shepherd has additional sea turtle defense campaigns currently underway in turtle poaching hotspots, including Honduras and Cape Verde. And in more Sea Shepherd news, I believe it was last week, three Sea Shepherd crew members were arrested in Faroe Islands for protecting hundreds of dolphins.
The three volunteer members of the Sea Shepherd's Pilot Whale and Small Cetacean Defense Campaign, Operation Grindstop 2014, were arrested just outside of the Faroese capital of Tórshavn for protecting a large pod of hundreds of Atlantic white-sided dolphins, preventing them from approaching the dangerous killing shores of the Faroe Islands. The Danish Navy chased, boarded, and seized Sea Shepherd's UK-registered boat, the Spitfire, and arrested its three crew members, Jesse Treverton of the UK, and Céline Leduron, and Marion Seligini, both from France. Though it is against Faroese law to interfere with the mass cetacean slaughter, known as the grind-a-drap or grind, no grind has been called when Sea Shepherd prevented the dolphins from reaching the shore. Moreover, white-sided dolphins are a protected species and are not to be killed. The Danish police, however, have charged the Sea Shepherd volunteers with failure to report the dolphin sightings to the grindmaster and police, ironically, and also with harassing dolphins. I guess they harassed them away from being killed, so I guess that's a better alternative. Sea Shepherd currently has an attorney involved. The crew and the Spitfire were released late this evening into the Faroes. They were escorted to the Spitfire and permitted to leave. The crew is to appear in court at 2 p.m. Faroe time. I believe this may have already happened. This news came out last week, and it said they were to appear in court the following day. I do not know the results of this case, though. However, the volunteers face deportation from the Faroe Islands by Denmark, and if deported, would not be allowed to return to the Faroe Islands for at least 1 year. Anyone have any comments on this?
I think we should do a follow-up maybe for next week.
I think
Seems like you're putting us on the edge here. It's to be continued.
I know. Sure. Well, that's how these cases work, though. Yeah. They never... they seem to go on forever. Some lighter news. Montreal is the first in Canada to open a cat cafe. The Café Duchette, which opened its door Saturday, is a lot like a regular coffee house, except it's home to 8 cats. Along with usual tables and chairs designed for human clientele, the space is filled with scratching posts, plush toys, and special multi-level window perch for the felines' residences. Nadine Spencer, who helped set up the business along with her partner, said the concept is a big hit in Asia and more recently has gained popularity in Europe. According to Spencer, the cafe is the first of its kind in North America. And there are plans to open cat cafes in several cities, including Vancouver and Toronto, apparently.
Yeah, I heard about that. And definitely, they're doing well in Japan already. So as you said, there's already been that model and it's done well. And who doesn't like to pet a kitty while you're drinking a cup of coffee? Except for me, because I'm allergic. But but in any case, well, thank you so much.
And I just wanted to mention, too, with the cat cafe, the main purpose of it is also to give cats a second chance, as they're all adopted from the SPCA and to spread the awareness about rescuing animals from shelters.
Well, thank you for the news, Jackie. Today's feature interview is an activist profile with Alexandra Paul. She is primarily known for her career as an actress, having starred in over 75 feature films and television programs, and being well known for her role as Lieutenant Stephanie Holden on the TV show Baywatch in the 1990s. But her extensive acting career makes up only one of her life's accomplishments, and she acts as a social activist in many arenas, including political, environmental, and animal activism. An ethical vegan, Alexandra will be the recipient of the Vegan of the Year Award at this year's Last Chance for Animals Gala. She was also presented the Activist of the Year Award in 2005 by the American Civil Liberties Union. Hello, Alexandra, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, thank you for coming on the show today to speak about your lifelong animal activism. I'd like to start by starting at the beginning. Can you tell us about your story of how you came onto your path of advocating for the animals, starting as a child and leading into adulthood? And what paved your path to find veganism?
You know, I'm 51, so it's a long story, but I don't want to bore you with one huge monologue, so I'll just try to make it really quick. I grew up in the country, so animals are really important. So for fun, we either read or played outside, and we had dogs and cats. We also had horses and occasionally some hens. So the environment was always really important to me. And nature. Nature was super important. And I know that throughout my childhood, my mother, we boycotted tuna in the 70s because it killed dolphins, just like it did in the, just like it still does, actually. And so I had an awareness that you, how you, you could be an activist with how you eat. Then I read Diet for a Small Planet when I was 14, which was in 76. So that basically, I stopped eating meat right after reading that book right away, for mostly environmental reasons. And then the next year I read Peter Singer's book, Animal Liberation, which was an ethical argument for animals. And so I became actually a vegetarian for both ethical and environmental reasons. And then throughout my, a couple years later, I gave up all products tested on animals, thanks to Peter Singer. And then because I met Krista Rose from Last Chance for Animals in my mid-20s, I gave up wool, leather, and silk. I still couldn't give up that last bit of dairy. And so I became a full vegan only 4 years ago, after 33 years of being a vegetarian. You know what I tell people, because I, when I leaflet for vegan outreach, I get that comment a lot about cheese. People say, well, there's alternatives. And but anyway, going back to the, I love cheese, I can't give up cheese. This is what I tell people. I say, you know what? Then don't give up cheese. Keep your cheese, but then give up everything else that you don't love, because an animal suffered and died often for that food that you don't care about. And that's the ultimate disrespect. So a lot of people, if people who love cheese gave up everything else that had to do with animals, we'd save a lot of animals.
Yeah, for sure. And that's actually exactly what I tell people. Fine, don't give up cheese, then just give up everything else. And you'll be doing, that's like the first step, right? You'll be doing a world of good. So what does being vegan mean for you, Alexandra, in terms of allowing yourself to live by your values and opening your compassion on a wider scale in various facets of your life?
You know, being vegan, it changed me in more ways than I can explain. Making that extra step and getting rid of all the dairy and becoming fully vegan meant that my diet was aligned with my values, which are nonviolence, peace, loving animals, treating the planet respectfully. So, gosh, it was an amazing revelation when I became vegan. I thought it was more concrete, but it became spiritual. And it's changed the way that I look at the world. My heart just broke open, and I look at everything differently, not only animals, but also people and the planet. And it feels really good that every day I'm making choices that are aligned with my values.
Absolutely. And you've said that you went vegan to save animals, but going vegan actually saved you.
It's so true. I wrote a blog about that. I, like a lot of women in North America, had an eating disorder when I was younger. And so that was the main block of why I never gave up those last vestiges of dairy. And it took me so long, because it was easy for me to give up the wool and leather and silk and the cosmetics and stuff like that. But I was really afraid that what I thought would be restricting my diet, that my eating disorder would rear its ugly head again. And what happened, actually, interestingly, was because I was being more authentic to myself, that I actually, my relationship with food has improved even more. And all those things that I thought I would miss and that I would be denying myself, those treats with dairy and eggs and sugar in them that I love so much, they're not even food to me anymore. I don't feel like I've given anything up, because there are alternatives, but also because I look at those things and they're completely inedible, just like meat is inedible to me now.
Yeah, I hear you on that for sure. So you are an incredible athlete. You're an Iron Woman triathlete. You're a long-distance swimmer. I'm just curious to know how you have found that your veganism affects your athleticism.
Well, I think it helps. I know that because I've only been a vegan for 4 years and I was a vegetarian for the 33 years, I did the Ironman on a vegetarian diet, but I did swim 12 and a half miles in the ocean around Key West on a vegan diet and trained for 5 hours in the pool, and I felt great. That was 2 years ago. And I'm training now for a 13 and a half mile ocean swim in Mexico that's coming up in 2 months. And I feel great. I'm showing that women over 50 who are vegan are strong.
Awesome. And that's just incredible. When I was reading like 10 and 12 mile swims that you've done, first of all, I had to convert to kilometers in my head. And then I just like, wow, that, like, I ran 10 kilometers today, and that's about 7 miles. I can't imagine swimming twice as much as that. I can't even fathom it. So amazing. So you've been working as a television and film actress now for many years. How easy is it to advocate for the animals in your career, and how have you navigated this and any challenges that have arisen in being vegan in a non-vegan world career-wise?
Just to start off with the personal is that I choose not to preach. My husband actually is a meat eater. I follow my own path and hope to just change the world, mostly by role modeling, because I found that preaching never worked for me. Role modeling is more effective. But in my career, I have found that Hollywood's been very supportive of me as a vegetarian. For example, when I had a scene in Christine, which is one of my first movies in 1992, where I was 83, where I was eating, I was supposed to eat a hamburger. You know, there weren't really veggie burgers really easy to get back then. So they allowed me just to have the bun and to eat the bun and not have a hamburger that I had to ingest. And when I was on Baywatch, I asked to be written out of scenes that were shot at SeaWorld, and this was in the early 90s, and they wrote me out without any ado, because they knew that I had, since because I already had in my contracts a rider that said that no makeup could be tested on animals, they already knew that I wasn't being a diva. I was just following my values. And I was offered a lead in a movie this year, which I did for the Sci-Fi Channel, and there was a scene where there were horses stampeding, and my character had to ride horses. Now, I rode horses when I was younger, but now as an animal rights activist, I no longer ride horses. And I didn't want to ride horses in the movie, and I just asked them if they could ride. I basically said to my agent, I can't do this movie if I have to ride horses and if there's a horse stampede in it. Because we all know what happens to animals on movie sets, as much as they say that they aren't hurt. They are exploited for the movies. So my agent just conveyed it, and guess what? We ended up finding an alternative that worked better for the movie, because it's not easy to have animals in scenes. It takes more time, it's more expensive, it's more dangerous, and we used a motorbike instead, and it worked just fine.
Who would have known? Use a motorbike instead of riding a horse. That's great. It's great to know that you have been able to find those workarounds, for sure, because I've just personally have heard like different stories in that kind of world, but I can see through your examples that that's not the case. Like, people can be reasonable.
Oh, yeah. I think, well, for one thing, because I've had a life of activism, I think people know that I'm not doing it because I'm a diva. And also, there, I wasn't forcing them. I basically just told them nicely that I wouldn't be able to do the movie if they kept these scenes in, and so could we find another way? And I did that. Well, with the producers on Baywatch, I simply asked if I could be written out and showed how if the other actress was in there and without me, it wouldn't really hurt the scenes. And they were really accommodating. I just would have to say no. I did, you know, my agent set me up on a milk voiceover audition, and I just said, I'm sorry, I can't audition for this.
Well, yeah, obviously, you're vegan. That was kind of silly. Okay. Well, you've accomplished much in your life in terms of activism in other realms of society, such as the anti-war movement, human rights, and environmental issues. Can you talk about your view on how these different social causes intersect with the animal rights movement?
Well, everything is connected, and I'm disappointed as a really strong environmentalist, someone who has solar panels and driven electric cars for almost 25 years and recycled compost, you know, I'm known mostly for my environmentalist advocacy. I'm disappointed that environmental organizations don't encourage a more plant-based diet among their donors and members. I think it's an obvious one of the many solutions to climate change. And one of the dangers about climate change is that our planet of 7 billion, soon to be 10 billion, eating more and more meat, which is more, just emits more and more methane and carbon, and is really, really bad for the climate. So it's obviously connected to the environment, and obviously peace and, you know, nonviolence towards all living things. I think it was, somebody said if we all just ate chocolate chip cookies, if the leaders of our world would eat chocolate chip cookies during a during their meetings, we'd never have war. And it's sort of that idea. I just think violence begets violence. And when we kill animals, it's more just easier to kill people and just easier to be more violent.
Well, I know that if I were a famous celebrity and if I had the kind of influence in media and society that you and others have as a result of being in the public spotlight, that I would use that influence for the good of humankind. Can you talk about this power of influence to do good for the world with celebrity and how you've used it yourself to advocate for the plight of animals and other causes?
Yes, first of all, I want to say to you and your listeners is that you don't have to be famous to affect amazing change. In fact, the biggest people who have affected change are not famous. We don't even know who they are. I advise people to do what they're best at. And I do have a platform, and a lot of people don't have a platform. So it's only makes sense that I use it when I can. And now with the internet, journalists, when they want to interview me, will look and see my website, and they'll see that I'm vegan, they'll see that I'm environmentalist, and so it always becomes part of the interview. And so I'm happy to discuss it, and because I think we learn from other people, and I think it's part of my role modeling. So I feel blessed to be able to talk about it, but I mostly only talk about it when I'm asked, because then it goes to the preaching realm.
And then just to expand a bit more on what you were saying about just how non-celebrities can be advocates for the animals in their lives, can you maybe just expand a bit more on that? I liked how you said you need to find your niche, find what you're good at.
Yeah, like, you know, I love people. I love being around people. I love talking to people. So, you know, if people ask me about being a vegan, I love to talk about it. So it works for me. But if someone is a fashionista, for example, then wearing a t-shirt or wearing great non-leather goods, that's a great way to advocate. And people say, where'd you get your boots, you sexy hot thing? You can say, oh, well, I got them at this great store. They're vegan, and they're actually less, you know, so that's the way to do it. Or to write about it, blog about it, cook vegan food for people. There's so many ways. Being vegan is not only about food, it's a lifestyle. It's the way you look at the world. It's the way you interact with people. I think we all have to find our own niche, and you'd be surprised who you affected. You know, I don't know anybody I've turned vegan. Except for, I know I turned my therapist vegetarian, because she told me after 10 years of therapy or something that she had become a vegetarian at some point during our therapy, and it was because of what I was saying, I guess, in our sessions. But I didn't know she'd become vegetarian. I didn't know what I was saying had affected her. But I guess, so sometimes you don't even know who you've affected.
So I think this is a good time to ask you about a comment that I read in one of your interviews where you have said that your focus for the second half of your life is to stop animal testing. So I think that's a pretty grand focus, and I'm curious to know, how do you plan to do that?
Well, I support an organization called the Center for Responsible Science. You can go to centerforresponsiblescience.org. And basically, what I realize is that we all love to blame the pharmaceutical companies or the makeup companies because they're testing on animals for their products. But the reason they're testing on animals for their products is because of government regulations. And it's boring and it's dry, but we need to change government regulations, and then the pharmaceutical companies and all the chemical companies, they will follow suit, and they will not use animals for testing because animals are not predictive of human response. And pharmaceutical companies, chemical companies, they all know that, and they're losing money because of it, because 92% of, for example, the drugs that test well in animals fail in human clinical studies. Now, that is not good business. So by supporting Center for Responsible Science, I believe that, you know, we have a long-term view, 10 years, but that we will be a major change maker in regulatory policy, at least here in the United States with the FDA. It's crucial. So, in Canada, too, it's really important. We can blame. We can't blame the pharmaceuticals as much as we need to encourage them to get policy changed, and we need to get policy changed ourselves.
So something else that you're working on is a project right now that you're producing, a movie thriller called Valerie X, about the founder of the Animal Liberation Front. Can you tell us about that and why you decided to produce this film?
Oh, yeah, I'm so excited about this project. You know, I've been an actress for over 30 years, and this is, you know, my first foray into producing a mainstream feature film, and I'm very excited. Valerie X is based on the book Free the Animals, which is written by Ingrid Newkirk, actually, who was the executive director of PETA. But it's about the cop that started the first North American cell of the Animal Liberation Front in the 80s. And she was a cop by day and an animal liberationist by night. And she's still on the FBI's most wanted list. Now, what could be a better story? A thriller. It's an amazing story. And the reason that I've chosen to produce it is because I know the power of the media, having been in the media and in Hollywood for 3 decades. And I believe that watching movies can change the way people treat animals. And a movie like this, which is entertainment and not preachy, but just tells a great true story about an inspiring woman, I believe will change millions of people's minds about how they view animals.
Absolutely. I think that's a really effective way to subtly get the message across, where it just gets people to really start thinking about it and accepting it as just an acceptable idea. So for sure.
Yeah, and you know the power of the media because you're here on the radio. You understand that this is how we start a dialogue.
And the power of film, of course, as you said, I think that's really the direction that needs to be taken, is people need to see these images in film and in video for sure.
And it's entertainment. I mean, this movie Valerie X is in the vein of Erin Brockovich and Norma Rae. So it's really about the transformation of one person from an ordinary person to an activist that turns their life upside down. But as we watch the film, we also transform because we learn and are inspired by the main character and the tribulations and challenges she goes through.
So when can we expect to see that movie?
Well, we're raising the money right now. We have a great script, and we're raising the money right now. I'm hoping 2016.
Excellent. We'll wait for it then. So one question that I like to ask in our activist profiles is about what your influences have been to shape your views and activism for the animals. So what have been some of your favorite books, films, and or people that have influenced you?
Well, books I mentioned, Peter Singer's Animal Liberation, Francis Moore LePay's Diet for a Small Planet, which now actually, it's kind of obsolete, so I would recommend John Robbins' Diet for a New America, which sort of is the more modern take on that and is more animal-centric, anything by John Robbins. I loved the film Forks Over Knives. I thought that was a very effective way of reaching non-animal people to get them to understand the health benefits of having a vegan diet. I really admire Krista Rose of Last Chance for Animals, who helped me. Actually, he's my inspiration for not wearing leather wool or silk over 25 years ago, stopping that. And my brother, my younger brother, is an activist and an Animal Liberation Front member. If the Animal Liberation Front doesn't have any formal members, but he was an amazing underground activist for over 20 years and a vegan for 30 years. So he's been an inspiration to me too.
Wow. So finally, I want to know, how do you see the world shifting in the way that we regard and treat our planet's animals? And what do you predict for the future in 5 or 10 or 20 years to come?
Well, because of the negative environmental effects of factory farming, and what I predict will be some kind of because of factory farming, the chance of disease happening within the factory farms and then mutating into humans is so dangerous that I believe that factory farming will be phased out, and we will all move to a plant-based diet, because we will have to move to a plant-based diet because we will not have the room, the topsoil, the water to feed people on a meat-based diet. It's just too wasteful. So I believe that humans are actually going to move away from eating animals, not because of our compassion and empathy, but because of necessity.
Right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show with us today, Alexandra, to share your wisdom and your story in acting for the animals. For more information on Alexandra Paul and much of the activism she is involved with, please visit her website at alexandrapaul.com. Thanks, Alexandra. It was really nice talking to you.
Thank you, Allison, and thank you for having this show. It's really terrific that you're spreading the word this way.
So you've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM, CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio on the unceded Coast Salish Territories, British Columbia, Canada. Please join us on our next show on Friday, September 26th. It will be a surprise, and I'm sure it'll
Yay,
be amazing.
Love surprises.
Yeah. So we at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can stream shows from our archives or download podcasts, read our show blogs, subscribe via iTunes, and just learn more about our upcoming events and shows. And you can stay in touch with us via Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. Join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YBR. And please send us suggestions and comments about the show on Facebook or radioanimalvoices@gmail.com via email. We do want to hear all your comments, suggestions, concerns. We want to keep a dialogue open, so please contact us. We'll be closing the show today with a song by the vegan Icelandic artist called Jónsi. It's about loving life, and we're playing it in honor of Alexandra Paul's example as living as a joyful vegan. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith, and thank you for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Howling wolves.